Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And it's time for our reporter roundtable, where we talk about stories making headlines across the 21st state. Today, we're focusing on the Quad Cities and Bloomington Normal. Joining us to talk about their respective areas is Brady Johnson, news director for WVIK, Quad Cities Public Radio. Brady, welcome back to the show.
Happy to be here.
Also with us is Charlie Schlenker, senior reporter for WGLT, Bloomington Normal Public Media. Charlie, welcome to you as well.
Hi, Brian.
All right, Charlie, I'm going to begin with you. Illinois State University is making budget cuts across all of its divisions. What's the problem there?
Well, the problem is not enrollment. ISU had its largest ever entering class. It's had the ability to keep enrollment steady for more than the last decade, not the same kinds of problems that Western and Southern Illinois universities or even Bradley University have had maintaining enrollment. So it is what the president, Andave Tarhule, blames on rising costs, declining state support in absolute and after inflation terms, and probably most significantly what he has called outdated budgeting models based on history and not current facts. He said that, you know, if we do nothing, the campus would experience a $32 million deficit in 3 years' time. So they're taking action now and over the next 3 years with a special task force.
Are there looks at raising revenue as well, or is it just cutting at this point?
The initial steps are cutting. The task force is going to look at raising revenue as well as what can they do differently, more efficiently. And there are no program cuts or layoffs, but there will be adjustments to programs eventually. The total that they're cutting for the current budget year, which is already one quarter past, is about $5.6 million. And they've imposed a pay freeze for the next fiscal year as well.
Well, sorry to hear that to everyone who's been affected. Brady, I want to bring you into the conversation now. Up in the Quad Cities, John Deere is paying nearly $10 million to settle charges that include commercial bribery. What happened there?
Sure. Yeah. The high-level managers and employees at its Workin Thailand unit apparently made improper payments to entities, including the Royal Thai Air Force and their nation's Department of Highways. And these payments were made between late 2017 and 2020 and took the form of cash, meals, shame, consulting fees, sightseeing ventures disguised as factory visits, and apparently massage parlor services as well. So the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission says those violated the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, and John Deere is agreeing to pay $9.93 million to settle charges, although they released a statement saying, quote, "These allegations represent a clear violation of our company policies and ethical standards. They're in direct conflict with our core values, particularly our commitment to integrity, and we strongly condemn such practices." Now, this was from one of its subsidiaries, not John Deere, known in America.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's one of those things where maybe it seems like the cost of doing business in another country, but it's actually illegal back here at home.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Charlie Schlenker, I guess this is somewhat related because it's still in the realm of manufacturing, but on a more pleasant subject. Candy maker Ferrero recently opened up a chocolate plant in Bloomington. Talk about that. What effect is that expected to have on the community?
It's a second chocolate plant, actually. They've had one for years that was originally Bike and then became Nestle Bike and is now owned by Ferrero. This is a brand new $214 million, 169,000 square foot building. It adds about 200 workers to the community workforce, and they're going to be making, or are already making some and will ramp up, the Kinder Bueno candy bar as part of Ferrero's push to expand in North America.
Kinder Bueno. So talk about the overall manufacturing landscape, right? There was the Mitsubishi plant closure. That's been succeeded now by Rivian. Is this an area, are employers able to find enough people? Is Bloomington seeing more people coming in? What effect is that having more broadly?
You know, Rivian's added more than 7,000 people over a period of several years, and Ferrero just added a couple hundred and had added more before that to existing lines. Workforce is an issue. The community college, Heartland Community College, has got apprenticeship and other training programs to in cooperation with both Rivian and Ferrero. So they're adding locally, but there's a housing shortage, as I'm sure you know. So a lot of the workers for both Ferrero and Rivian are living out of town. Some are even potentially driving in from as far away as Kankakee.
Wow, to work at those plants. That's quite a commute. That's more than an hour every day, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. Let me take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're beginning, as we do most Fridays, with a reporter roundtable. This week, we are focusing on the Quad Cities with Brady Johnson, news director at WVIK, and Charlie Schlenker, senior reporter at WGLT in Bloomington Normal. And Brady, there's a new plant, I guess we're still sticking with manufacturing or industry, a new plant in Buffalo, Iowa, that aims to convert landfill waste into energy in order to make cement. How does that work?
Yeah, the Continental Cement Davenport plant outside of Davenport, like you said, in Buffalo, Iowa, announced earlier last month in September that they're including a new technology from a Denmark company called Fuel Flex Pyrolyzer, which takes landfill waste and breaks it down into energy used for the kiln that creates the cement instead of using coal or petroleum coke, which is a final carbon-rich solid material derived from oil refinery. They're using shredded up paper, plastics, rubber. So this $38 million expansion includes this pyrolyzer as well as enlarging their building to include these new shredders for the materials as well as a new siphoning tool to take rubber from metal and put it into separate areas.
Where are they getting the garbage from to do this? Is it just, go ahead.
Sure. No, it's from the local landfill up in Davenport. They're taking some of that into their facilities instead of having it go into the landfill.
I want to get beyond your reporting, but I think making cement, making concrete is one of the more carbon intensive. Is this an environmental thing? Is it a cost thing? What did they say is the reason they're doing this?
It's a little bit of both. Yeah, they said right now the industry, and who I'm quoting here is the president and CEO Ann Noonan of Summit Materials, which owns the Continental Cement plant in Davenport, that really for the industry, 14% of them use alternative fuel replacement. But the fact that they're including this pyrolyzer will allow them for the Davenport plant to go up to 55. So the technology is more cost effective, according to Noonan, as well as it's better for the environment because it will be reducing their carbon emissions from the cement plant.
Brady, while I'm with you, let's move over to the Mississippi River. Of course, we had a conversation on the show this week about low water levels. But meanwhile, mayors from 10 states along the Mississippi met in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, for the annual Mississippi River Cities and Towns Initiative. What came out of that?
Yeah, they were there to finalize a Mississippi River Ports Cooperative Endeavor Agreement. Bettendorf, Iowa Mayor Bob Gallagher was there. And basically, this agreement will allow them to make it easier to request federal funding for infrastructure projects across the Mississippi River between these 10 states. And it also, at least for our local area, creates a new river port for eastern Iowa, which includes Clinton, Dubuque, Jackson, Louisa, Muscatine, and Scott counties. It makes it easier for them to receive these federal funding and also to plan for river cruises like the Viking cruises, which is something that Ryan Simpf, the executive director for government affairs at the Quad Cities Chamber, mentioned, which will make it easier for them for these types of events and also for the agricultural industry as it passes through the 10 states going down to Louisiana.
Wait, Viking cruises like the ones I see advertised on PBS? I didn't realize those happened on the Mississippi River.
Apparently, they're trying to get them up and going on the Mississippi River, according to Simpf. But yeah, I usually think of Western Europe with the ads when I see them.
The great art. I guess we can put the figgy on that list maybe now as one of the stops. Interesting. All right. Well, speaking of, I guess, museums and history, Charlie, the McLean County Museum of History has an exhibit on asbestos production in Bloomington Normal. What did you learn from reporting on this story?
There was an asbestos plant in Bloomington Normal. It was called Unarco, lasted several decades. Before that, it was in Cicero, and after they closed it in Bloomington Normal, it went to Paris, Illinois, as workers began to get sick from the asbestos in the air. The interesting thing about the exhibit, it charts corporate misconduct and malfeasance rather carefully. The company tried to suppress the dangers of the knowledge of the dangers of asbestos and successfully did so until lawsuits started to happen.
I'm looking at some of the photos on the web story that you posted about this, and they look so fuzzy. That's the best way I can describe them. Fibers. Yeah.
Workers talk about looking up through the skylights and all twinkling fibers in the air that just coated everything. And when you look at those photographs, as you said, it looks kind of like a cotton mill. So, and they produced asbestos insulation kind of like you would roll cotton too. They put it into a sort of a thread and then a weave and then a fabric and then put paper on either side of the fabric. And it's not the most environmentally safe or friendly for workers. And over 100 of them ended up dying of asbestos-related illnesses, and that's just the ones that are documented. Of course, some death certificates just say cancer or respiratory disease, and so those aren't definitively tied there.
And you tell a story, it even goes beyond the workers themselves, you know, their spouses. There's a story of a wife who, you know, had to do laundry for her husband who worked at the plant.
She ended up having part of a lung taken out, and their sons, you know, the dad would come home, and they would, you know, as kids do, play around. The dad looked sort of like he was not in an asbestos plant, but maybe a bakery because it was all white. And they would slap his pant legs, and puffs of material would rise from that. And it's all asbestos.
Is this known history, or is this, I mean, obviously it's known to the people at the museum, but is this something that you feel, is it commonly known in Bloomington Normal, or is this, has it sort of been forgotten over time?
Yeah, it's become forgotten, and part of the exhibit comes through the lawyers. And Bloomington Normal was a center of asbestos litigation for some time in the nation's history because of the plant here. And so some lawyers donated their case files to the museum, and that has provided some of the things. So, for instance, in terms of corporate cover-ups, they x-rayed the workers. And when they got too sick, they decided that they were going to lay off the workers. But, oh, if you sign this document, we'll give you a little settlement. And the document required that you not sue them. But the x-rays stayed in the company doctor's offices. And they found 15 linear feet of x-ray films. That's a lot of workers over a lot of years.
The documents always get you. And it's still, this is still an ongoing story, right? Because, for example, you note that the Normal Public Library is closed right now for remediation work on asbestos.
And a few years ago, they had to close a junior high school in Bloomington Normal temporarily for asbestos abatement. So every house, every government building for decades had asbestos in it. And if you have anything pre-1970 and post-1940, it assuredly has asbestos in the house. And it has cost an unbelievable amount of taxpayer money and other treasure for the nation, and a fairly pronounced health cost as well across the nation.
Hmm. All right, Brady, last question to you. And this is about something happening at the Quad Cities YWCA, putting together a session for an anti-racist group. Okay, that doesn't sound too unusual. But this one is for white people in particular. Say more about that.
Sure. Yeah, it definitely caught me by surprise when I heard it was for essentially white people of the Quad Cities. But the organizer, Lexi Larson Bonds, who works at the YWCA Quad Cities as a grant writer, mentioned that she attended a similar session at the St. Louis YWCA last year. And she kept this idea with her about kind of working with fellow white residents, working through their prejudices, the kind of internal racism that we carry with us every single day, but maybe people aren't aware of it because it's subconsciously. So it's going to be a month-long kind of workshop series where I think right now they have 15 people signed up, but it's still open. They're starting next Wednesday, meeting for 3 hours. So there'll be working through activities, as well as reading My Grandmother's Hands, Racialized Trauma and the Mending of Our Bodies and Hearts by Resma Manekam, which one of the other co-organizers, Sarah Stevens, picked out. She will be leading the discussions every Wednesday. It will be a virtual workshop until the final one on November 13th, when they're all meeting in person.
Brady Johnson, news director at WVIK, and Charlie Schlenker, senior reporter at WGLT. Thanks for being with us and sharing your reporting with us.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us, Brian.
Coming up after the break, we are going to continue our Friday reporter roundtables. We will turn now to politics. We'll be talking with Brendan Moore, reporter for Lee Enterprises newspapers, about what he has been covering this past week. And I also want to mention before we go to the break that we are now on YouTube. Not video, just audio for now, but you can find the 21st Show on YouTube by searching for Illinois Public Media. Again, go to YouTube, look up Illinois Public Media. You can also find us on all your other favorite podcast platforms, Apple, Spotify. There you just search for The 21st Show. Or you can find all this linked from our website, 21stshow.org. More to come after the break. It's The 21st Show. Stay with us.